Bah humbug, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Happy to have you all here. What a disaster. Lakers lose 119-96 to the Houston Rockets. I'm Trevor Lane, Yobam Buha, Jason Tipp here. We're going to be talking about what happened in last night's game. Is this fixable? Is there anything the Lakers can do? And is this real? Is this who the Lakers really are? And what does that mean for them moving forward? Guys, not the Christmas present we were hoping for, the lump of coal in our stockings, courtesy of the Lakers. How are you guys doing?
First of all, it's great to see you guys. I hope all of you guys had a Merry Christmas. That goes to everyone in the chat as well. Even if you don't celebrate, I hope you had a chance to hang out with some friends and family. I want to kick to Jovan because I want to hear him go scorched earth. Like, what? I want to hear it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get right into it.
Let's go. I had a nice Christmas with my wife, whose birthday is on Christmas, so we celebrated her 30th birthday. But outside of that, yeah, this was. I took time away from my family to watch this game. And just like everyone else did, right? And I immediately regretted it within the first 5 minutes of the game. I was like, I should probably go spend time with everyone else. But I mean, to me, this is just the culmination of the Lakers were winning in spite of a lot of their flaws and shortcomings, as we've talked about continually throughout the course of the season. That's the biggest reason why they've had the net rating and the point differential that they've had. It's the biggest reason why, when you compare them to a Denver, a Houston, obviously not OKC, even though they're kind of going through it right now, specifically with San Antonio, like this has been where the concern has lied, and it has finally reared its head. It has finally manifested. And I don't know where you guys want to start. Like, we could look at blitzed for the upteenth time this season, minus 14 in 8 minutes and 14 seconds, a 66.7 offensive rating, which is just awful, atrocious, but also a 144.4 defensive rating with that group. They enter the evening as a bottom five starting lineup in terms of net rating. If you look at all like 30 primary starting lineups, that dropped from a minus 13 now to a minus 19.9 on the season with that group. I will say this, if JJ Redick starts that group again on Sunday, he can point his finger at whoever else he wants to point his finger at. He can call out people in the media. He can say he wants to make people uncomfortable. If JJ Redick starts that group again, he is setting this team up for failure. And I, not only do I not think that starting lineup should play a minute together again, I think Luka, LeBron, and Rui should not play a minute together again this season. They were minus 34 in 16 minutes against Houston. For the season, that trio is minus 14.1, and they just cannot defend anybody with those three players as your two, as your two through four in a lineup. So, I mean, we could keep going, but the Lakers right now, the only team with a negative point differential in the playoffs right now, top 16 teams in the NBA, the only one with a negative point differential. I mean, I entered the season optimistic. I've tried to remain optimistic up to this point. Last night broke my confidence in this group. I will just say that. I don't think they're a trade away anymore. I don't even know if they're two trades away. I think there's some real issues here.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love it. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Yeah, and I agree 100%. Now, JJ's comments after the game suggested that change is coming. He said, we've given them all chances or something to that effect. They've all had chances, talking about whether or not change was coming. I would hope that means we're seeing change coming. And I think in games, we've seen them start to shift more towards the defensive groupings with Marcus Smart, with Jake LaRavia, with Jared Vanderbilt. It hasn't always been effective, but I would assume change is coming on Sunday. And for no other reason, they're probably going to be without Austin Reeves, I would assume, if he's getting an MRI today. We're still waiting to find out on that. But Jason, I know you weren't pleased with that game either. So I'm going to pass the mic to you here and let you do your thing.
Yeah, anytime, I always say this, anytime you have like a shocking result, like for instance, a team, we can say what we want about this roster, 4-6 over a 10 game span is going to be a lot of different things that are to blame. Luka is averaging 9 fewer points in losses than he is in wins. He is shooting below 30% in losses, and he's averaging 4.9 turnovers per game in losses. And I saw a lot of Luka fans blaming the roster last night. You don't think the Denver Nuggets were going out there with a limited roster and their superstars just backpack the team to a win. And look, I understand it's a lot to ask a guy to do that every single night, but when you've got a guy down like Austin Reaves out of the lineup, when you've got guys that are injured or just that aren't playing super well, your superstar's job, when you're in that tier with the Giannis's and the Lucas and the Shays and the Jokic's, your job is to cover for mistakes and to cover for flaws. And Luka's been unable to do that. I thought that was literally LeBron's worst defensive rebounding and overall defensive effort of the entire season. It was pitiful, frankly. And like, what's so disappointing about it is like, the team actually really needs him to be great at this kind of stuff. In the past, like in years past, I'd be kind of like forgiving of him because he was the primary perimeter initiator for this team. And he just had so much offensive responsibility. And it was ridiculous to ask him to be Draymond Green. And don't get me wrong, I think Austin's injury kind of exacerbates this problem because now you kind of need LeBron to give you 25 and 8 assists, you know, in terms of like fueling the offense for stretches. And I think that's actually going to make LeBron even lazier as time goes on, which is tough. But I'd put it pretty simple. I'd be like, hey, LeBron, I understand that you're 41 years old and you wish that you could chill in the regular season. Like, I totally get that. Like, I mean, like, I totally get why he's like, I cannot believe I have to do all this stuff. But guess what? This team, thanks to Rob Pelinka, which I'm going to get to in a second, needs you to do this stuff. So if you're not going to do this stuff, the Lakers have to ship him out. They got to find some way to send him to a different situation because he can't keep playing 35, 36 minutes a game and not defensive rebounding and not making defensive rotations. And it's just like badly, badly hurting the team. You know, Rui, to me, I'm going to say the same thing about him that I would say about anybody. It's stupid to look at Jake LaRavia and be like, you save us. It's stupid to look at Rui Hachimura and you save us. Like, we know what Rui is. Rui is a four man who's not really a dirty work guy, who's at his best when he can play the four and we can knock down catch and shoot threes when he's wide open, which when he's not doing that, he's not going to bring a ton of value to the table. When he's being played at the three, as Jovan is pointing out, he's utterly useless in this construct because he can't guard on the perimeter. He's not a crackdown rebounder who's going to scrap for the ball. He's not a guy that's going to move his feet on the perimeter. He's not doing any of that stuff, right? So like, I look at LeBron as like a guy that I know LeBron can defensive rebound. I know he can make the rotations. He has that stuff up here. He has the instincts, and even at his old age, he still has the athletic ability to do so, and he is choosing not to do it. And so when you have Austin hurt and you have your other two stars basically failing the team. And by the way, if you want to tell me, oh, LeBron, he's got to do more because Austin's hurt. Austin played that entire first half for the most part, and LeBron wasn't rebounding, and LeBron wasn't making rotations. And so, honestly, that's not a good excuse to me. And when you remove those three from the equation, it just shines this giant spotlight on the fact that Rob Pelinka has built a roster that is utterly incapable of competing in the modern NBA. Austin and Luka, with how amazing they were on offense to start the season, carried this team to wins in crunch time, which allowed them that even after this 4-6 stretch to still be the four seed. So credit to those guys for the job they did early in the season. But without those guys, you need two things to succeed in the modern NBA. You need athleticism and you need shooting. And this team has neither of those things at any spot on the roster in any sort of real functional sense. And it's been years of this. And I said this on my show this morning, and I mean it sincerely. I think the Lakers should fire Rob Pelinka. I think they should not even give him the opportunity to try to address this at the deadline. He's had his chances. He's had a decade's worth of chances to demonstrate that he has a basketball identity that he believes in, to demonstrate that he understands what works in the modern NBA. And over and over and over and over and over again, he has not done so. And I would not even give him the opportunity to try to address this as this trade deadline. I would bring someone in who's ready, willing, and able to revamp this roster over a three-cycle stretch, like in this deadline, this summer, next deadline, to hopefully get this team ready to compete in time for next year's playoff run. Because this team, to me right now, looks like the seventh best team in the Western Conference. I thought the Warriors looked better than them yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong about the Warriors looking better than them and them not looking like one of the better teams in the Western Conference. I do think the challenge is finding the players that they need. We're talking about these athletes that can also shoot, that can do all these things. That's a difficult proposition for any GM, Rob Pelinka or otherwise. That said, it's the job.
But other GMs do it.
Right, that's what I'm saying, right?
Do you think Rob's going to get
that done. And so we look back at, like, the Jordan Goodwin decision. Should you have paid the price to move a different contract off of your books in order to sign? Signing Marcus Smart was not the incorrect decision. What was the incorrect decision? Not paying the cost to get Jordan Goodwin. to keep Jordan Goodwin on your roster by moving a different contract. Maybe I certainly think he would help this team this year. You have to find ways to find those guys. Again, not saying it's easy, but that's the job. You got to find ways to get it done. I'll tell you what bothered me when we talk about, you know, Jason saying that the stars have to do the heavy lifting, and you're absolutely right. LeBron's got to be the guy to show up. When LeBron shows up and he sells out, he's diving on the floor for loose balls. We saw that a little bit in the, I believe it was the Clippers game that didn't go well. But if LeBron is playing hard, everybody else can't help but follow along because LeBron's 40 and you have to if he's out there doing his thing. If he's not, the rest of the team could be a little bit more low energy. So look, Jason is absolutely right that Luka has not been great lately. LeBron was not good rebounding the basketball. I think it's more of a everybody type thing. You can't have Rui pulling down two rebounds in this game. Luka can't lead the team in rebound. Luka can lead the team in rebounding. He can't do it with five rebounds. You can't lead the team in rebounding with five rebounds, not when you're going up against the Houston Rockets. I'll tell you the moment. The opening tip, J.J. Redick said he knew immediately that they weren't going to bring the care factor to this game. The opening possession, the Rockets took a shot, missed it, got the offensive rebound, kicked out to an open three. That's exactly how the Houston Rockets win games. They are the best offensive rebounding team in 30 years in the NBA. You have to be prepared to battle that and fight in the post, and the Lakers simply did not do that. They didn't have that care factor. And that, we talk about LeBron, talk about Luka, talk about Rui, talk about any individual player, Austin, Ayton, whoever else you want to throw in. But what really pissed me off was this is Christmas Day. This is Christmas Day. This is, some fans don't start watching the NBA till Christmas Day. This is the game. This is the spotlight. You're in a marquee time slot. You're in this big matchup. All eyes are on you. Both teams needed a win badly. Both teams have dropped games recently that they shouldn't. One team played like it. The other one played like they wanted to go home, like they weren't interested in competing. That, to me, before we get into all of the should this lineup start, should that lineup start, these guys have to care out there. Otherwise, nothing else matters. That's what's going to matter. But do you care to be out there on the floor? Does it bother you when you lose games enough to do something about it? Do you have any kind of heart? Because the last few games, the answer has been no. And I don't know what the hell has happened to this team because the vibes were great around this group like 3 weeks ago. And now suddenly it's like they couldn't be bothered to go out there and compete. Even when they know what's coming, even when they know what they have to do on the glass, the physicality they have to bring, otherwise they're going to get their butts kicked. They're choosing to get their butts kicked. It's absolutely infuriating.
I'm so glad you brought up the effort and care factor piece because, like, to me, it literally is everybody. Like, for instance, like to point the finger at Luka for a second, like he came out at the beginning of the Suns game and at the beginning of this game, and just turned the ball over like every time down the floor and couldn't make a shot and just spotted the other team a 10-point lead in the opening minutes. Like, as the leader of the team, if he comes out and he's surgical on offense in the opening possessions and maybe gives the Lakers a 3 or 4 point lead a couple minutes into the game, maybe everyone's a little bit more, but it trickles down. If LeBron just skies and snatches a rebound on the first possession and goes, I'm controlling the glass tonight, that infuses the team with an energy and a belief. And instead it's the opposite. Luka comes down and pisses on his leg, literally the first few stretches of these games, and sets the stage. LeBron comes out and he's like completely mailing it in. And so when those guys do that, it trickles down and then you can literally see the belief get sapped out of the team. And then everyone just mails it in and it turns into this ugly thing. Like, these guys from the opening tips of these games have to do better to set the stage of what the expectation is for the team in that game.
Jovan, do you buy what JJ Redick said about tomorrow's practice being uncomfortable and implying that change is coming and all of that? Do you buy that it will make a difference?
I think it'll make a short term difference. And look, they get the Sacramento Kings on Sunday, so they should win that game, and maybe they even have a rare blowout win for a change here. But I think to get back to my earlier point of kind of being out on this team for the time being, like, I no longer care about their record. I no longer care about their place in the standings. Like, I want to see them beat the top 5 to 6 teams in the NBA and beat them multiple times. Like, they get another shot against Detroit next week on Tuesday. That's a nice opportunity to beat
big physical team too.
You know, big physical team, best team in the East right now, but record wise, like, that would be a nice step in the right direction. Even that is not going to get me back in on this team if they somehow find a way to win that game. But, like, I think they need multiple statement wins against top 5 or 6 teams in the NBA, which obviously is partly a schedule thing in terms of just like who they're playing. But until then, I'm just like, cool, you beat Sacramento by 8, probably, right? You're going to beat Memphis maybe a couple times, but they do not have enough good wins, in my opinion. I think the 3 best teams they played this season are OKC, San Antonio, and now Houston. They're 1-3 in those games, and all 3 losses were by, you know, in blowout fashion. That to me is the barometer. Like, last night was supposed to be a measuring stick game. We were supposed to come on here and compare the Lakers to another team in that top 3 or 4 mix in the West. And if this is the team that they are against these types of teams, which, again, it's a they went 1-2 against Phoenix, but I don't, like, Phoenix is still, in my opinion, a notch or two below some of these other teams in the West. But even against Phoenix, like, if they were playing Phoenix in a first round series right now, I'd probably pick the Lakers to find a way to win, but that, like, might be a 7-game series right now. So I think my bigger concern is, like, they're looking like a team that I don't have any confidence in them winning a first round series as currently constructed. Like, I would not pick them against OKC. I'd not pick them against Denver. I would not pick them against Houston. I wouldn't pick them against San Antonio. Minnesota for me is 50-50. It's pretty close, but, like, Minnesota has been playing better. Okay, that's 5 teams I just said I'd probably pick over them in the West. And then to top it all off, we have now this Austin calf situation that is continuing to extend. You have Luka, who, like, started limping and grimacing in the second half of last night's game, and he might need some time off with this calf situation, if we're being honest. So it's like, if those two guys have to miss any extended period of time, now the Lakers are in a real danger zone, even with, like, continuity and whatnot. So I don't know. I told you guys before the show, I don't have many, if any, positive things to say. And I think it'll help temporarily.
Vando made three threes.
I thought, like, the two things they did, like the two most positive things last night were Vando hit 3 threes. And I thought they defended Şengün reasonably well with their, like, doubles and the spots on the floor where they helped from. But then they did not box out or rotate out of that. So it would be like Şengün would find a cutter, or maybe he'd force up a shot. Then Steven Adams gets the offensive rebound. So it was like, all right, it was a nice, like, 14 seconds of defense, and then you guys can't finish a possession. But in terms of, like, I think JJ, in whatever uncomfortable practice they're about to have, it'll help. But I think, to both of your points, like, it has to start with the top of the roster. It has to start with, hey, Luka, don't get blown by on the perimeter continually. Hey, LeBron, rotate and box out. And, like, Rui, what are you doing on most defensive possessions? Like, why are you helping off of Jabari Smith one pass away him an uncontested 3-pointer? Like, I think it has to be like starter focused. Like, forget the bench. The bench actually played reasonably well. Marcus Smart came in, made an immediate impact. Jared Vanderbilt came in, made an immediate impact. The Banshees did their jobs. It's the starters. Like, it has to start with the starters and with the best players on this team.
So when JJ Redick says I'm paraphrasing, but we're talking about the lack of a care factor, saying it's consistently the same people, you think he's just talking about the start? Like, who is he talking about?
I think Rui's starters. The low hanging fruit, but it also, I think, has to extend into LeBron and Luka too.
LeBron was sticking out like such a sore thumb yesterday. I don't think he could possibly not be infuriated with him.
I will note too that there's been some, there was a couple of interesting comments last night from JJ. Like, obviously there's the ones that have gone viral with the, you know, didn't care enough, we're going to have the uncomfortable practice, guys are continually, like, not making the tough decision. But in his pregame press conference, his final question, someone asked him about LeBron and LeBron taking care of the ball. And they were like, you know, last game against Phoenix, 6 assists, 0 turnovers. Like, what have you thought about LeBron's playmaking and sort of just like decision making lately? And all he said, and like he sometimes with JJ takes a little bit to warm up, he'll start a press conference off a little cold, and then like he once you get into like the meat of it, he starts giving these like eloquent long answers.
You know you want to go podcast, off, JJ, but just do it.
when he gets asked this final question about LeBron, all he says, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was like literally this short. He was like, "Yeah, he's been playing well lately." That's all he said. He did not expound upon the question. He did not go into any detail about LeBron. And I found that a little interesting of, again, he had just rattled off multiple like 20 to 30 second answers. And he gets asked a positive question about LeBron. And it was like a little icy. And then after the game, the final question, and JJ does like, he does have the flair for walking off. So maybe that was a part of it. I will acknowledge that. Cause once again, the final question was about, you know, you're going to have this uncomfortable conversation. You're going to make some changes. Like what does that mean for the rotation? And he's like, we've given everyone a chance.
Yeah.
So we'll see how dramatic it gets. I think again, it has to start with breaking up the starting group, but I thought those two answers were pretty interesting.
JJ doesn't have a flair for walking off. What are you talking about?
I love that Jovan called that. It's so funny to me in his pressers. He always just gives those little 2-3 word quips, and then it's like, you want to just do it. Just do it, JJ. Just go off. You know you want to. Stop pretending you're not going to.
Well, so when you're the kind of question that you're talking about with LeBron, essentially what you're doing, the reporters that are asking those questions, you're basically teeing them up, right? Praise a player here. Speak highly of a player. This is your opportunity. And he's taken those opportunities to rave about players in the past. So you're right, Jovan. That is interesting that when given the opportunity to really, you know, gush about LeBron and what he's been doing, he kind of sidestepped, just kind of said, you know, whatever. He's been playing great. So that is something interesting. I do wonder what that whole dynamic is going to look like in that practice. Does JJ call out Luka, LeBron? Are they receptive to that? What does that look like? Luka's comments after the game sounded like he definitely gets that they've got to play harder. It starts with him. I think he said all the right things. The question is, will we actually see it? Will we actually see a difference? And unfortunately, you're right, Jovan, that against Sacramento on Sunday, they could come out and play well. They could win by 13, 14 points, something like that, and that won't necessarily prove anything.
I think Sacramento can beat them.
I think so, too. They beat Houston.
Yeah.
They beat Denver.
They're fast on the perimeter. They've got some guys that can drive the basketball. And by the way, guys,
With the Lakers spinning out right now, a Russ revenge game where he just drops like a 30-point triple-double would be the absolute like worst-case scenario right now.
Oh, my God. Honestly, that might be what they need. They need to just get absolutely humiliated by Russ. The thing that's frustrating, too, guys, is like, didn't JJ just sit down, Luka and LeBron, and have the defense talk?
Yeah.
They've had multiple defensive meetings and multiple defensive-focused practices. And their defense has somehow gotten worse since then.
He did say in the interview last night, I heard, like he said, like, we've been practicing this stuff.
Yeah, he did. He said, we've been practicing this stuff. They just don't care enough to do it. Which brings us, I guess, to, is the defense fixable? Let's say the care factor is there, because that's what you need first, right? You have to have the care factor to compete at an NBA level. And if you don't have that, then, I mean, nothing else matters. You're screwed. But let's say the care factor is there. They play hard. They do what they're supposed to do. Is the defense fixable as presently constructed? And by fixable, I don't mean, are they going to be a top five or even top 10 defense? Can they get to average, middle of the pack defensively as presently constructed?
I think anybody can get to the middle of the pack strictly based on the fact that the schedule is weak enough. Like the schedule, like you can put up a decent defensive rating against bad teams just by being in the right spots. Like the whole point is like there's a big difference between like, can they execute better to be a reasonably decent statistical defense, and can they ever hope to guard the good teams, to Jovan's point. Like I don't care what their record is, or even if they have a top 12 defensive rating against, you know, the Grizzlies and the Kings and all these other teams over the next couple of weeks. It's more, will they ever be able to contain the ball well enough to defend against the best teams? No, literally no chance. Not unless they dramatically change and make multiple trades. But do I think that they could do a better job rotating and executing their defensive game plan? Yes, I do think they can do that.
I agree with that. Like, I think they, I mean, I was going to say they can't get much worse, but I guess it's technically possible.
Famous last word.
I think they could get back into like the middle of the pack. I think entering the season, my biggest concern with this team was the defensive side of the floor. And I said, like, I feel like this should be a top five, if not top three offense, but I was a bit lower. I felt than, or maybe not than consensus, because consensus was pretty low on the Lakers. And some of those people are being proven right to a degree right now. But I felt they were like somewhere between the 13th to 17th best defense. For me, that range has shifted backward a little bit in terms of I have a really tough time seeing them being an above average defense as currently constructed, because I feel like people, the one thing that I've had a little bit of an issue with the Lakers discourse recently has been they're acting like something changed in the last week or couple weeks. And yes, that is true to a degree in terms of it's gotten even worse over the last week or couple weeks. They have now been a bottom three defense for 15 straight games. That is over half the season. So like they are 25th in defensive rating for the entire season. So the notion that like, yes, they had a stretch of like, it's actually the inverse for me, where they had a stretch of like 2 weeks where they were sort of like in the 10 to 15 range. Outside of that, they have been a bottom five defense the entire season. So can they get to like 17th? Maybe. But 17th is not good enough with this group, especially when, like, I think we focus on the defense a lot. The offense has not been good lately either. The offense has really struggled and is showing, like, even that top five conversation that we've had, that might not be in play as currently constructed. So if you're, like, the eighth best offense and even, like, the 17th best defense, that's not good enough. You're still probably losing in round one. So, yeah, I mean, I think what continues to be true to me right now is that among all the teams that we want to call like West contenders, whoever you want to put in that mix, none of them have a flaw on one side of the floor as glaring as the Lakers currently do. Entering yesterday, all of the top six in the West were top 17 on both sides of the ball. The Lakers stand out like a sore thumb at 25th in defensive rating. So that's the issue right now. I guess like Denver's going through it. They're missing three starters. So again, their defense is probably going to slide a bit moving forward, but even they pulled out that incredible win against the Wolves, and Jokic had maybe the best game of the season. So, yeah, I mean, the Lakers are just in a really tough spot right now.
Yeah, to
be practical, go ahead.
Jovan. Oh, I was just going to say, just a quick stat thrown in here. Over the last 10 games, Lakers are 14th in offensive rating. They are 28th in defensive rating, and their net rating is minus 9.7. So this is not like a just these last three games or whatever. That's over the last 10 games that they've been struggling that badly. Yikes.
To take it to a practical direction, I think lineup structure is huge from this point forward. I completely agree with Jovan. I would, in addition to never having LeBron and Rui on the floor at the same time, I would stagger the Luka-LeBron pairing as much as humanly possible and try to just keep as much speed on the floor as possible. Get as much of that, push Vando and push Jake and push Marcus into the high 20s in minutes, and really lean on as much of that defensive structure as you can, because your best opportunity to compete is those guys eventually making shots rather than hoping that Rui will one day, you know, really sky or scrap for a rebound.
LeBron and Rui, I just pulled per cleaning the glass, is literally the worst defense in the NBA. First percentile, 129.4 points given up per 100 possessions when they're on the floor together.
But it's a small sample size, so we can't make any conclusions from this.
It's 468 possessions. Yes, tiny. So it's,
no. I was being sarcastic.
I was quoting
JJ.
Oh no. Okay. You know what, guys? We have vented quite a bit on this show. Let's get into our chat questions. Let's spend a half hour letting the chat vent, because let's let the chat vent a little bit. We're going to get to that in 1 minute. We'll be right back. First, we're going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Underdog. And then we'll get into all your chat questions and comments. That way you guys can vent a little bit too.
If you think you missed out on Underdog's holiday promos, good news. You haven't. Underdog Wrapped is still going, and there are promos all week. When you sign up with Code Collective and play your first $5, you'll get $75 in bonus entries, plus an exclusive gimme pick that you can play right away. With Underdog Unwrapped, you're still unwrapping promos through December 31st. So if you haven't signed up yet, now is absolutely the time. On Underdog, just pick higher or lower on player stats for a chance to win up to 5,000 times your money. I've already locked in my picks for this week. Underdog is available in most states, including Florida, California, and Texas. Again, make sure you sign up with code COLLECTIVE and play your first $5 to get $75 in bonus entries and a gimme pick. Thank you again to Underdog for sponsoring the show.
All right. And again, big thank you to Underdog. You guys use that code COLLECTIVE. We definitely appreciate them. All right. Let's do this. Here we go. the first one. Rui is a tortoise. He is slow to start. I think, Jovan, we talked a lot about the starting lineup. The idea is that Rui should not be among the starting five. If Austin is out, right, let's assume, and if he's getting an MRI today, I'd imagine Sunday's very much in doubt. What should the starting lineup be? Like, what would the starting lineup be when it's officially announced where you would go, boom, JJ did it?
I think the most aggressive version for me would be Smart and Vando. I think maybe the middle ground that's more realistic with JJ's proclivities would be Smart and Laravia. I think if it's just swapping in Smart for Austin. Now, I will note that lineup is actually I guess technically that was Austin in for LeBron, but like the quartet that has actually played really well, the Lakers' best four-man combination this season has actually been Luka, Austin, Marcus, and Rui. And mm-hmm. whether you swap in a smaller group and go a little bit smaller with that, or you play a center, that has been the best quartet this season for LA. So obviously no Austin and LeBron in there is going to change that a little bit. But I still think it comes back to me of, I do not want to see Luka, LeBron, and Rui play together. I think it is just the floor with those three defensively is so low that they can make even the worst teams and the worst offenses look passable at a minimum. So I think it has to start with a combination of like Marcus should be in there at a minimum to replace Austin, and Rui should move to the bench for either Jake or Vando. If he continues to start Rui and just says like, well, let's just give this group a look because Austin's out and we're not really making any sweeping changes yet, I think that's just JJ not taking accountability on his part and actually addressing the elephant in the room right now, which is like, I mean, they need to make trades. Clearly they need to go in a different direction with this group, but the low hanging fruit that has been there basically since the off season is not to start this group. And we've only seen that, like, there's not been many positive things to take away from that starting group together. And it has to change.
That group that you're talking about, Luka, Smart, Rui, LeBron, Ayton, in 49 possessions, they are minus 55.1. Yikes. All right, let's go here. Bulls have guys like Io Dosunmu, Patrick Williams, bad contract, but we keep our first. Isaac Okoro would be an underrated ad. They're the perfect trade partner for what we need right now. Jason, what do you think about that idea, targeting some of those Bulls guys in order to mix things up? And I know a lot of it depends on what you give, but do you like those players as targets?
First of all, just really brief piggyback on Jovan. Yeah. I would start Marcus and Vando. I think that Vando has been like sneaky one of their best players over the last couple of weeks. And then when you add in, I think Marcus, even though Marcus hasn't shot the ball well the last few games, Jake has just been so inept on offense. And Marcus's aggression and his ability to at least occasionally get to the basket and finish, I think brings the right, you know, kind of mix of offensive firepower that you need to at least counter Vando to a certain extent. So yeah, I'd go Luka, Marcus, Vando, Braun, Ayton for the, and we didn't talk about Ayton, but Ayton was brutal yesterday. I thought that was one of his worst games of the season.
Well, the last two games with Ayton.
Yeah.
Like they were targeting him a lot actually, which I've like, I'm always interested in who the opposing team targets because there are so many options on a given defensive possession, but they were bringing Ayton into screening actions and being like, we're going to test him off the dribble. And he did not pass that test.
He got beat a lot.
No, yeah. He was bad. I do think that he's a little bit of like a takes on the personality of the team kind of guy. So I do wonder, like, I think that's why we don't focus on him when we think about it. Because it's like, of course, Aiton's bad. Everyone's bad, you know. But I do think that that was part of the problem. As far as the question, whether it's, you know, Dosunmu, Isaac Okoro, Pat Williams, other kind of types of bad contracts slash not necessarily high value athletes around the league, I think that from the standpoint of trying to build culture, as you're trying to build for the future, if you're thinking you're going to eventually swap these athletes out with better athletes as time goes on, not necessarily better athletes, but better players that are also athletes, you want to try to establish some sort of continuity in system and approach and culture. Like, this team's going to need, let's imagine what a Luka Doncic team looks like if it wins a title one day. It's going to have a strong defensive identity, right? So you need to start from the ground up to build that identity. And so I would be looking for a significant turnover, to the point Jovan made in his first rant. Like, it may not be one trade or two trade. It may be, you know, five or six players through various trades to try to bring in those athletes. And you may have to be willing to swap a, you know, a bad contract for a bad contract, so to speak, but one that is a better athlete to try to fill that gap. And so if that ends up being a situation where, you know, you turn a Rui into a Patrick Williams, but at least you get a guy who's a little bit more athletic, who's a little bit better at those things, it's a step in the right direction. If it's an Isaac Okoro instead of a Gabe Vincent, it's at least a step in the right direction. Even if it's not the solution that's going to make the Lakers contenders this year, at the very least, you might be able to build an identity that can kind of spill over into future seasons.
Are we, I think the three of us are in agreement on this, but tell me if I'm wrong, in that the Lakers are not going to be able to completely build out an ideal team as it should be constructed around Luka this year at the trade deadline, but it's more you could take some steps towards that.
Agreed.
Okay.
I'll actually go as far as to say, like, I've ever since our last pod on Monday, where we talked about are the Lakers contenders, I think it was actually last week on Thursday, I'm going to do a new contenders rankings for my show next week. And I'm like seriously considering dropping them off the second tier and moving them to a third tier. Like, to me, they just look completely dead on arrival against most of these teams.
All right, let's go here. It would never happen, but what do you think of Luka for Ant-Man? Gives us a two-way superstar player next to Reeves. Wolves would be good too. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that would ever happen.
They already said no to it, allegedly.
Is that, oh, was that the one Dallas offered?
Yeah, I think so, right, Jovan, if I remember correctly?
I thought that was Giannis.
I've heard different versions of what was, but I've heard Ant-Man was one of, Ant-Man and Giannis were the two guys they sniffed around on.
Yeah, I can't see, like, let's say the Wolves call the Lakers. What do the Lakers say? And they offer Ant for Luka.
You say yes. I don't know. That's a good question. Ant's Luka stock's pretty low right now, and Ant's rising, so that's tough. Ant was incredible last night. Did you guys catch the Wolves?
Yeah, game? That three to send into OT.
He's been playing.
I think both sides say no. Because for Minnesota, you can't quantify how important having like that homegrown number one pick who has embraced the city, right? And Minnesota is not a destination. So my immediate fear, if I was in the Wolves front office, would be like, we trade for Luka and he's finding his way out of here within the next 12 to 18 months. Like, Luka's made it clear he's more of a warm city guy rather than a winter guy. So I think that would be a factor. And then from the LA side, it's like, I don't think Ant has the offensive ceiling, of course, that Luka has. He is much better defensively. So you do, it's a different foundational piece in that regard. But I don't know if Ant can get to the highs that Luka can get to of like putting a team on his back in like the 2022 or 2024 fashion. He's gotten close, right? He's gotten to a couple of conference finals, but I think they've been thoroughly outclassed and like neither one of those series was close in their two conference finals appearances. So I don't know. You could make an argument for Ant over Luka if you wanted to, but I would still rather bet on Luka longer term.
Higher ceiling for Luka, but also lower floor.
That's probably fair.
Okay. All right, let's go here. I think this is a good question. Don't buy at the deadline. This team can't win. Now, just that part. He also said hard reset around Luke Austin Reeves, Braun, Ayton, Rui don't fit. Get a defensive anchor center like Kessler. That will be difficult. But a defensive four like Aaron Gordon. So when we look at the trade deadline coming up on February 5th, this last three-game stretch has been rough, but it's been more than just that. We've talked about that. What's the message to the front office? Because I've been saying for a while now, like, hey, this team's shown something. The vibes are good. This team looks good offensively. If they make some strides defensively, this is a group that's worth investing in. Has this downtrend changed that? Do you now feel like this team is not worth investing in if it means sacrificing future assets in order to win now?
Again, this probably takes like a Wiggins deal for a first round pick off the table, because that doesn't make sense anymore as like an all in type of move. But any sort of move that is a smart asset move, like everyone always thinks of a first round pick as the only form of an asset. So like, let's say, for instance, you move a first round pick for Herb Jones. There's nothing that could stop you from then adding Herb Jones to a trade in the future and then getting similar value back or as part of a larger trade. Right. So like if you had Herb Jones and you traded Austin with him as part of a deal for a superstar, like like Herb still has value in a situation like that. So like, this is going to take multiple cycles. And so at this point, I just think you become more prudent with your moves this deadline and don't throw assets towards a win now move, but you certainly are looking to address these problems as soon as possible. Like if you can make a phone call today for a trade that brings an athlete in and that doesn't cost you an asset, I think you got to consider it.
I largely agree. I'll say that I've been thinking about this a lot more recently. And I think, you know, the Lakers have an impressive ability to kick the can down the road and sort of sell future hope, right? Mm-hmm. They've been doing this for multiple years. And I think we have to like acknowledge Luka's about to be 27, and by no means is he old, or like he should be theoretically, based on players of his caliber, about to be entering his prime seasons, right? Like at the very beginning of his prime of 27 to 30, 28 to 31, somewhere in that range of most Hall of Fame players. Like you look at their peak years, it's somewhere in late 20s into early 30s. That's the prime of your career. The Lakers like having this vision of we're going to kick it to next year, or we're going to kick it to 2 years from now. Like, I just think that would be a terrible mismanagement of Luka's prime and Luka's career. And that's where I do agree, in the sense of I don't think they should necessarily make a short-sighted win now move for like this season of this guy's going to help us for the next 4 months, and then like next year we're not quite sure. But if it is a Herb Jones, or if it is someone in that early to mid 20s range that can be a piece for this season and moving forward, I think you still have to make that move. And that's where Herb continues to be, for me, someone that's perfect, because he will help you in the short term. But as you retool this roster next summer or next season, he is a foundational piece you could put around Luka and who complements him well. But the kind of like, let's stand pat and let's not do anything, and let's look toward next summer, let's keep the first round picks. Like, I just feel like we've seen this movie before with this front office, and they continue to kick the can down the road and sell future hope. And I just think we're going to be looking at like in like 2029, and it's like, where have the last 3 years with Luka have gone? And it's, you know, potentially not going to be in the best spot. So I think I do, like, I'm not saying make a move just to make a move or make a short-sighted move, but I also think there should be some level of urgency here, of even more so of, hey, if maybe the season isn't going the way we wanted, let's make a future move rather than a present move. And even if that is like maybe a step back for this season that will help them propel forward next season, that might be the approach here. Because if they don't make a move, like, I don't know, I just don't see how you can seriously sit there after the trade deadline and say you're trying to maximize your window around Luka.
Okay, so if you're talking about a future move, potentially over a current move, just throw a hypothetical at you. Let's say a team calls you up and says, we'll give you would the Lakers pay to get him? 3 seconds for, we'll give you 3 second rounders for Rui. He's on an expiring contract, and we'll give you an expiring player that doesn't really do anything in exchange, but they won't be on your books long term. In order to help replenish the Lakers draft capital, would you be interested in selling in a situation like that?
It feels a little low for Rui. I'd probably want at least like a back end rotation guy that I feel like could, I could have some, like an athletic back end guy that maybe I could have some more confidence in longer term.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think I'm right there with you guys in that I think that it's tough because we say, well, if the right move is there, then of course you make it. Or if it's a future, a move that's going to help you for the future, then you make it. There's going to be frustration if they don't make a trade. Every team that doesn't make a trade at the trade deadline, there's going to be frustration. But is that move there where you do thread that needle of, hey, we're only going to make a move if it's the right value. We're only going to make a move if it's a move that helps us right now, plus in the future. Like that,
I like where your head's at, though. I will say, like that general frame, like that is the type of move I'm talking about. Of if you can maybe potentially make take a step back in the present for setting up the team better in the future, and maybe you can flip. Now, the tricky part is because of the expiring contracts, because of their cap situation, you might just have some limited avenues in the summer in terms of like all that money's coming off the books. So you don't have those tradable contracts. Like I'd almost be that interested in, can you, if let's just say you do that Rui trade, can you then do another trade before the trade cycle's over and use those 3 seconds to attach to Gabe and Maxi for a Herb or for someone making 15, 18, 20 plus million that then kind of fits your timeline better. So maybe like, again, more of a step back in the present, but longer term, you're better set up for success. Because I think at this point, like I'm pretty close to being out on Rui as a fit, like longer term. I don't think you're having Rui be a part of the next great Luka team as a starter, maybe as a bench player, but with the way the Lakers have empowered him or utilized him and the contract he's probably going to get, I don't think like you have to, again, I've said this before, you have to have an all defense level center and wing, and Lakers are far away from acquiring that type of player.
Yeah, that's the tough part, right? He's trying to acquire those types of players to make him a long-term fit. You could go into the summer with multiple first-round picks available, second-rounders, things of that nature. That said, you go and you sell off players at the trade deadline in order to have more ammunition for the summer. Maybe LeBron goes nuclear. Who the hell knows what Rich Paul says on his next podcast at that point? You know, there's other things you have to consider there, too. All right, MJ said JJ should go scorched earth on this team, and deservingly so. They need to start the convo again regarding Rob and Jeannie and their blame in this too. Yeah, what do we think practice looks like tomorrow for the Lakers? Does JJ go scorched earth? Jason, what do you think JJ does? He's obviously upset. He's obviously angry. He probably is right now pacing and not sleeping. What do you think he does in practice?
I think this team needs like a good film session where they're calling everybody out. Like, I think there needs to be like a little bit of like in front of the team humiliation for the effort and energy. I mean, it, like out on the practice court, it's going to be more or less the same sorts of things he's saying in the huddle in terms of getting on guys, but showing specific examples and then turning it into drill work, I think would be the best way to try to get some more accountability out of the group. So the question though, like, I mean, guys, this has been the story ever since the Russell Westbrook trade. Like, there have been phases where the teams looked pretty good because LeBron and AD were able to cover for them, or Austin, obviously, as the years went by. And then there were phases where LeBron and AD kind of went down a level for one reason or another, whether it was AD was a little bit out of rhythm because he was hurt, or LeBron, same sort of thing, or the jump shots would fade for a little bit or whatever, and then all of a sudden the roster issues would rise to the surface. And that's kind of more or less what I've seen this season. Like, when Luka and Austin have been able to cover for their issues, the rosters looked okay and functional at times. But every time they're not operating at that, you know, Austin at an all-NBA level and Luka at a first-team all-NBA level, it's just immediately come to the surface. And I think it's time for Laker fans to point their fingers at the leadership at Rob and Jeannie.
As this comment notes, we've been playing out of position for the Rob era.
True. We haven't had a legit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 this entire time. there have been significant positional, you know, like deficits. I don't think we've ever had a good small forward, but we've had stretches where we've had no power forwards. Now we've got several power forwards. We've had stretches with no centers. We've had stretches with guards that can't defend. It's just, there have been significant positional deficits every single season of this era.
ASAP Mimic throws out, not going to lie, we should get Dylan Brooks. The math is easy. Suns would love expirings if the price is right. Why not? That's the question. Is the price actually right? I mean, if you're in the Suns right now, you're thinking, man, we could make it to the second round of the playoffs. We've got a puncher's chance there. I don't know that Phoenix is selling right now.
Yeah, I think that the Suns have been one of the bright spots of the season. Golden State is playing better, but the Suns have at least positioned themselves to be a top eight team in the West, barring a serious injury to, or maybe even a couple of serious injuries. Like, they even won when Devin Booker was in and out of the lineup, right? So I think if I'm Phoenix, with how bad things have been the last couple of years and how upset the fan base has been and some of the heat that ownership has taken, I think like this is a nice, this is one of those like transitional seasons where you kind of ride it out, and they'll probably be like a 46-36, 47-35 type team, be the 7 or 8 seed, lose in a competitive 6-game first round series. And like, that's a success for this group. So you'd probably have to bowl them over with a Dylan Brooks offer. And that's probably starting with Rui in a first. And that's probably not even enough with how well Dylan's been playing and how important he's been, because he's been like
again, the 30th best player in the league this year.
Yeah, Devin Booker's awesome. Devin Booker's their best player, but Dylan Brooks might be their most important player, and like he's that engine for them on both sides of the ball, with like just the irrational shooting and confidence offensively, and then the dogged defensive culture that he brings. Like, we could say what we want about Dylan Brooks, and certainly he crosses the line far too frequently, but dude is a winner, and he helps teams. We saw the impact he had in Memphis. We saw the impact he had in Houston. Now he's having that impact in Phoenix. Like, I would love to add Dylan Brooks to this team. I just, I think with how Phoenix's season is going, there's no reason for them to sell.
Who's the most important Laker?
That's a great Luka. Question. Austin Reeves.
It's one of those two. Yeah.
It's or Austin. Yeah. Probably Luka for sure, and then Austin too.
Yeah, I think it can change game to game too, which is interesting. Not where we expected to be coming into the season. Genuinely think Jeannie threw him a bone financially with that extension before she sold the team, because she knew he won't be here long.
It's not a terrible theory. It's a little conspiratorial, but we will allow it.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you get new ownership in place, they tend to want to shake things up and tinker with things and bring in their own people. So, I mean, it's a typical thing.
He did pull off the Luka trade.
The Luka trade, yeah.
And I know people will say, you know, well, that was gift wrapped to him, and there is some truth in that. But he did, that was a master's class in negotiating, in terms of keeping Austin out of it, keeping, at the time, Dalton, who had much higher trade value at that time, keeping the additional second first round pick. Like, the fact that I don't want to relitigate the trade, but like the fact that they were able to keep those three assets and not put at least one or two of them in addition to what they were already giving up, I will give Pelinka a lot of credit for that. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, it's much more of a mixed bag throughout the course of his track record, and frankly there's a lot of misses in there and a lot of just head-scratching decisions.
I was gonna say mixed bag was a very friendly way for you to put it, Jovan, so
he's nailed a lot of the big stuff and all of the details, like back-end roster, as you were talking about, the positional balance of the roster, like, and really I think
been shooting.
I mean, the two-way perimeter play has been like, I mean, this has been a need for 5 years for the Lakers, so like that's been a glaring omission to the roster that they just can't seem to figure out.
I was thinking about this in the Suns game. Like, we don't even have a guy like Royce O'Neal who like can confidently step into like a three to beat nail help. Like,
and they wanted less.
Yeah. Like, we don't even have a guy who like is good at above the break threes off the catch that's not like Austin.
Yeah.
No.
They don't. To me, it's been so you stumbled onto things, right? Whatever we want to say. It was their plan B. It was their backup plan. Post Kawhi, Kawhi made the mistake of picking the Clippers, a decision that will be deeply rooted in that franchise for years to come now. But Kawhi picks the Clippers. The Lakers execute plan B, which was, you know, Danny Green, and you went and got Boogie Cousins and all the other pieces. And suddenly you were like, oh, whoa, we put a bunch of guys who can defend and shoot threes alongside LeBron and Luka, or LeBron and AD, I mean, and it worked. And you go win a championship. And I don't know if they didn't buy what it was that they had stumbled upon, this concept, because now everybody is using
Clearly not, right? Like, right? They went away from the roster build immediately.
Right.
They've always thought stars drive success, which is like, it's true, but it's never been only that.
But the point is, like, they've been trying to get back to, they've needed to get back to that style of build. And everybody saw that and went, oh, this is the way we need to build our teams now moving forward. And it's made it very difficult to go find those players again. In addition to, they're still paying for the sins of the Russell Westbrook trade. When we look at their asset base, like how many assets they actually have at their disposal, you gave up a first to get Russ. You gave up a first to move Russ off your roster. You know, you added assets to D'Angelo Russell, who came in the Russ trade in order to turn him into Dorian Finney-Smith. Then you lost Dorian Finney-Smith, right? Like, it's just on and on and on. You keep churning through these assets, trying to get back to where you were years ago, and you can never find those players. I mean, if you put 2020 Alex Caruso, KCP, Avery Bradley, right, Danny Green on this team is awesome right now. But finding those guys is now much more difficult than it was back in 2020. And getting back to that has been is a real challenge for them. And that's where we've been stuck now for years, is trying to get back to finding those players who can do those things. And now those players are much more valuable than they were back then.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go here. Oh, Jason, I know you got to run here.
Yeah. Sorry, is there a way for you guys to stay on? I do have to run. I'm sorry, guys. I have a plane to catch. I'm headed back to Colorado. We can go back to going long on Monday. I mean, what's the one? We have only one game this weekend, right? Just the Kings game?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we could do like a, you know, brief Kings reaction and then get into a bunch of super chats on Monday to get back to all these questions.
Yeah.
It's an idea.
Mm-hmm. We could do that. Assuming nothing crazy happens. I can try to do something over the weekend, you know, addressing some of the super chats. I know we've got a lot of them here and I don't want to leave them just hanging. But yeah, maybe we can have Monday's show be that. I don't know. Jovan, if you have time, I can stick around for another 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, I got time.
Okay. I can try to finagle it here to where we don't look all thrown off. We will.
You just have little yellow lines in your face.
Yeah, there we go.
Hey, it was great to see you guys. Seriously, I hope you guys had an awesome Christmas. Everyone in the chat, I know today was negative, but yeah, we're just feeling it out as fans with you guys. I do sincerely appreciate all of you guys for supporting the show, and I will see you guys on Monday.
All right. Thanks, Jason. We'll see you.
All right, man. Safe flight.
All right. I mean, I guess
I can move over.
You can just lean a little bit. All right. So let's go here. Austin Reeves, all-star chances cooked, is and Luka still limping. Does this change Austin's ability to make the all-star team?
I think it's been trending in that direction a little bit more lately with the losing, and he's not playing at quite the same level. Then you're also going to have him missing. He's already missed some games and will likely miss some more games coming up here, just due to the Lakers being cautious in nature. But yeah, I mean, I think they're both, like, Luka's going to make it, and I think he'll be voted in as a starter. But they, like, that's honestly probably my biggest fear right now, is that neither one of those guys looks healthy. And it's also tough to separate, even with Luka, for example, right? Like, I think the effort and execution have not been there properly defensively, to be sure. But I also look at his inability to separate off the dribble, and, you know, some of his shots being a little short, and him limping and grimacing at times. And I'm like, he does not look healthy, and it's hard to separate. If he's not healthy, he's obviously not going to defend up to his capability. So that there's sort of like a chicken or the egg element, right, to that. But if both these guys are injured, which they are both dealing with injuries right now of, you know, varying severities, that's concerning, because they are the Lakers' two best and most important players right now. So I don't know. And they've been the, like, when those two are on the floor together, the Lakers have a plus 19 net rating. Like, they have dominated with these two specifically together. And if they're not healthy or they're unable to play, like, that's probably my biggest concern of all, just because the Lakers, at least like right now, they're on the trajectory, obviously, to win 50 plus games and be in that top six. But if either one of these guys misses a significant amount of time, like, that's where the play-in mix becomes, I think, a you know, potential reality.
Yeah, that's where things really start to fall apart. And, you know, we just had the break in the schedule where they had the NBA Cup tournament. So it's not like there's going to be, you know, until we get to the All-Star break, which is the middle of February, we're not going to be at a point where they really have a prolonged stretch where they can get rest. So do you have Austin playing at 80% or whatever? Is it Luka playing at 80%? Do you shut them down for a week, for 2 weeks, and then you wind up, and then they heal up? But do you just lose all those games in that stretch? That's going to be a challenge here for the Lakers to try to figure out. This kind of begs the question, does LeBron make the All-Star team this year? Does he get voted in as kind of like a legacy team, or does he not?
I think he gets voted in by the fans, but remember, that's 50% of the starting lineup vote. And then you have players voting, and I would not, like, the players tend to vote based more so on like legacy or status or respect. Right. So I would not be surprised if he gets in because of the fan vote and the player vote. The media is not going to vote for him. I think the media starting lineup in the West is a little bit more straightforward, and LeBron's not part of that. Then if he somehow, I think if he doesn't get it voted in as a starter, he probably doesn't make it coming off the bench, because I think, again, looking at, I mean, the Lakers are now trending downward, right? 4-6 in their past 10, three straight losses, but it's also tough to get three All-Stars in there. And I would rank them in terms of All-Star candidacy as Luka, Austin, LeBron right now. So we'll see. I think it's for me, it's more so he's either in as a starter or he probably doesn't make the team. But I think he does have a decent chance to make it as a starter, just because of who he is and what he's meant to the game. And if you think about it, Jokic is a lock. Shea is a lock. Luka is a lock. Then Wemby, then you're like the Wemby Ant Steph range. And I think you could argue for two of those three as like the final couple spots. But I wouldn't be surprised if, again, the players and the fans have LeBron above a Wemby, an Ant, or a Steph, right? Like, LeBron has traditionally been the vote getter in the West, or like a top two guy. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's going to be interesting to see when those first returns come out, what the vote looks like. Because I agree, I think the way that he gets in is via that fan vote. That could potentially put him over the top. And then the players, those two. I think the media probably doesn't vote him in. But I think you're right in your analysis that if he's not in as a starter, he probably doesn't make it in as a reserve. And that in and of itself would create, LeBron doesn't make the All-Star team, that would be a big, you know, topic of discussion. A lot of people be talking about that around the NBA. I still think he probably gets kind of the legacy vote, but we'll see. It is
that might cost Austin then, the past. Right? Like, I don't know if the Lakers get three guys.
That's true. That's true. You know, I've been thinking about this with LeBron, that we may be at a point. So LeBron's great. LeBron still puts up big time numbers. He still has the ability to take over games at times. We see him. Is he consistent? No. The effort last night was bad, of course, on the boards and all of that. I think where we're at with LeBron is we're hitting a point where for the last 23 years, your team has simply been better with LeBron on your team. If you have LeBron, it's a very, very good thing for your team. I think we're now hitting a point where if you could take a lesser player that's a better fit, you could wind up with a better team. Like, if you took an athletic defensive four that can stretch the floor, you know, an Aaron Gordon type or something like that, that is not of the same caliber as LeBron, it could actually raise the Lakers' ceiling over having LeBron. And that's not to say LeBron's not good anymore. It's not to say LeBron can't still get it done. But I think we're hitting a point with his impact, and rightfully so, he's 40, but with his impact, where a better fit may take this team farther than having LeBron out there.
I just looked it up, and just as like a counterpoint or maybe even a starting point for moving forward, with LeBron on and Rui off, the Lakers are plus 0.4, which is not great, But mm-hmm. I think that's a start, because if you look at most of the lineups LeBron has been in, they are negatives this season. To your point, like the Lakers are losing a lot of the LeBron minutes right now, and it has been hard for them to field, especially within the context of Luka and like that. I mean, that trio specifically has been bad together in terms of on off and net rating and whatnot. But I think a starting point has to be, as you know, to kind of bring it full circle with the starting group, you have to change the starting lineup. And specifically, I think you have to break up the LeBron, Luka, Rui trio entirely. But then if you're like, you can play two of those three guys together, but I think the two that should play the least together, if not frankly, like almost never, is LeBron and Rui. Because I think what, when those are your three and your four right now, the backline rotations, the boxing out, the switching communication and playing with a certain level of force and physicality, it's just, it's not anywhere close to where it needs to be. And LeBron could do it for possessions. He could do it for stretches, but he can't do it for a full game. Rui can occasionally do it for a little bit, but he can't do it for a full game. And that's where I just think sometimes they put those two together and those lineups just spiral out of control defensively. And also it's worth noting, since LeBron returned, Rui has a 12 usage percentage. And like, that's been a big thing of Rui playing next to LeBron has really marginalized Rui offensively. And that's another thing of, if Rui's not featured offensively and he's not even getting shots to, you know, he's not even attempting shots. That's where it just becomes, at some point, you should not play those two guys together and you need to lean more into the Banshees. Because if Vando's not getting shots, Vando's still impactful. If Marcus Smart's not getting shots, Marcus Smart's still impactful. Jake LaRavia, same thing. Rui's not that type of player. Rui needs to be getting shots. And I just think with that starting group, it just, we have enough of a sample size now where it's just not the reality.
Yeah, and last night was a prime example of that. Rui was 0 for 6. He didn't score at all. 0 points in the game. The only Laker to not score in the game was Rui. 2 boards, 1 assist in 28 minutes. I mean, he's getting
minus 29 or something.
Yeah, minus 29. Right? You're not getting anything. He's not doing the other stuff. And that's really, I mean, back to a conceptual level, that's the key for the Lakers. It's around, whether it's Luka and Austin, Luka and LeBron, whatever combo of those three that you have out there on the floor, whoever else is on the floor needs to be somebody who can do everything aside from just scoring the basketball. They have to be able to rebound, hit hustle, hit the floor, defend, make the switches properly, all these kinds of things, right? That's what you need out there on the floor with the three of them, is the guys who are going to do the other stuff, all the dirty work things. And that's not really Rui. Like, Rui is a player, I think he's very good in terms of what he does, putting the ball in the basket, but him in the starting lineup just isn't working. All right, let's go here. Ayton is fine. If we're committing to Luka and Austin as a duo, I think we need a center that's better able to clean up mistakes on the back end. Would love to target Bam in the summer. I love that we set our sights high, right? Let's go get Bam, one of the least acquirable bigs out there on the market. Go get Bam out of bio. Hey, it's the Lakers, right? They've got a who's who of stars. But is there something to that? Is DeAndre Ayton the long-term fit, or do you need someone who obviously wouldn't have the same offensive touch, perhaps, depending on who you get, as DeAndre Ayton, but could be more of an impact player defensively and on the glass?
I think it really depends on the lineup construction and the rest of the group. But to this point, I recorded a mailbag earlier in the week, and I talked about it. This was pre-Suns and pre-Rockets. So a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth coming off of those two losses. I think to this point, like, Ayton is fine defensively, and some of his defensive metrics are pretty good. The rim protection numbers are solid, and I think he has largely been like adequate defensively. I think most of his value has been offensively and then with the rebounding. But to this point, I think if you have Luka and Austin together as a duo, you have a certain deficiency defensively that you're starting out with, and you really need to make up with the other three players in the lineup. And I don't think Ayton makes up for it enough. So that really puts the pressure on the other two perimeter players, ideally like a big wing / forward, and then like another, you know, multi-positional guard or smaller wing type, to really be lights out athletes and defenders and motor guys. So if you're putting, you know, Herb Jones and Lou Dort out there, or Herb Jones and Tamani Kamara or something like that. With those three, okay, I can see that being a functional two-way lineup that, like, but you need a certain caliber of defender and motor player and athlete out there with those three. So I think it just changes how you adjust the lineup. If you're going with like Ayton and Rui and Luka and Austin longer term, I have a lot of concerns with that group at like the highest level. So I think if you do keep Ayton, you need to support him with a certain level of motor and defense. But that then it just narrows your roster build. And now we're getting to the point where it's like, okay, Ayton, Luka, and Austin, love that trio offensively. I think that that's like the perfect second number two for Luka in terms of a guard. Incredible pick and roll partner with Ayton. We've seen one of the most effective and efficient finishers in the league. He's awesome around the rim. He's awesome in the paint extended area. He's awesome as a mid-range shooter. But defensively, there are real limitations there in terms of he cannot clean up all these messes. And there will be a lot of messes with Luka and Austin together. So I am starting to come more to the side of longer term. I think I probably want a better defensive center. And, you know, I think someone like looking at like what Lively theoretically was able to do in Dallas, before his injuries and stuff. So, yeah, I'm coming around more so to, if you have a better defensive anchor, you have a little bit more leeway with the other two perimeter spots. If you have someone who's like a B minus defensively or so, then you have to really nail the other two spots.
And I think Ayton has been fine on the season for the Lakers. I think he's had some really good games. I think his finishing ability has legitimately been fantastic. His ability to hit the little 15-foot push shot has been great. Especially when we look at the value too. $8 million on his contract for this year. Hard to complain about the production you're getting for
completely outperform his contract.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, look, we went into the summer talking about, can the Lakers get Clint Capella? Can the Lakers get Brook Lopez? They wound up with DeAndre Ayton. They wound up in a much, much better spot by getting Ayton the way that they did. But long term, yeah, I think you can make the argument. Like, if you could put 2020 JaVale McGee on this team versus DeAndre Ayton. Ayton's certainly a much more talented offensive player overall, has the ability to score the basketball in ways that JaVale simply couldn't. But JaVale, a much better in terms of his backline defense, his ability to erase shots at the rim. Is he going to play as many minutes? Maybe not. Maybe JaVale's more like a 20-minute night guy. But you could argue maybe that archetype of player, even if they're not quite as talented as DA is, might actually propel this team farther. Kind of similar to the LeBron conversation we were just having.
Agreed.
All right, let's go here. So this is one. I get a lot of this. Jovan, we need to try out Adu Thiro. We have no choice. So I am of the mindset, somebody fixed our screen here. Awesome. I'm of the mindset that Adu Thiro is essentially turning into inverse Trevor Ariza. Do you remember that season? Remember that season? I know we have all repressed it at this point, but that season where it was, well, the Lakers just need to get Trevor Ariza back and everything's going to be okay. Trevor Ariza had the skill set the Lakers needed, but he was too old. I think Adu Thiro has the skill set the Lakers need, but he's too young to be the piece that fixes things for them.
Agreed. I've tried to temper expectations anytime I get asked about Adu. I think it could be worth, when they're putting in Dalton or Maxey in the rotation, like that's where I think, okay, at least give Adu a shift or something, right? Like I think I'm gonna quote myself here. Two things can be true where he could be worth a 4 minute shift, a 6 minute shift, and play somewhere between 6 to 10 minutes and let's like see that sample size grow a little bit and just because I still feel like we don't know enough about him at the NBA level in terms of the defense has popped at times. The athleticism has really popped, but we've seen like the shot isn't there yet. The finishing has not been there. And that's one thing that Krangis has been really hammering on X is that a dude was like, he was awesome from floater range in college, but he really struggled with layups and was a below average finisher despite his athleticism. I think we've seen that where he's had several possessions or sequences where he's gotten downhill, gotten by the guy, gotten to the rim and missed it. So now part of that, though, is like you want to develop that, right? Like you're seeing these flashes, you're seeing these kernels, you want to develop it. So I think once, especially with how injured the Lakers have been, once you start getting to the Dalton Maxey part of the rotation, I'm cool with just playing a dude there. And like, I don't see any conceivable argument for playing Dalton over a dude. For like, Dalton has not been a consistent or reliable shooter, and he has not really shown much progress defensively. So with what this group needs, I think Adu should get all the Dalton minutes. I think Adu should get, you know, Maxey might have to play if they're down a center, but if they're not down a center, just play Adu there. I'm with you though. Like I think people have treated him like he's going to save the team. And I think he exists more in theory than he does in reality right now. And that's okay because he's a second round pick rookie who missed 8 months this season with a knee injury and didn't get a summer league, didn't get a training camp, didn't get a preseason, didn't get a start to the season. So it's totally understandable for that guy to not be ready to be a rotation player. But I also think based on some of JJ's choices with the back end of the rotation, anytime Dalton's out there, with the exception of garbage time, I think Adu should just be out there instead of him.
Yeah, no, I disagree. I agree with that. I don't think that if you're getting now, I think slotting wise, JJ is going to look at Dalton more as a 2-3 in theory. Throw is more of a 3-4.
Depends on the lineup. Yeah,
depends on the lineup. Sure, but it conceptually, yes. And I think it's more important for the Lakers' future that Adu Thiro hits than Dalton Connect hits. I think we're at that point. It's more important, for the ceiling is higher if you get Adu Thiro to turn into what the Lakers hope he can be than getting Dalton Connect to turn into what he's could potentially become and is not at this point. So yeah, I'm in agreement. Give those minutes to Adu Thiro. I think that all parties involved would have been better served, with the exception of maybe the Lakers side of it. But in terms of the players, I think Mark Williams would have been better off had that trade gone through. And he's played fine for the Suns, but I think Dalton Connect definitely would have been better off had that trade gone through too, because he'd get more opportunities just to go out there and play with the Hornets in a way that the Lakers can't really afford him that.
He needs to be on a small market Eastern Conference team, just toiling away in anonymity and just scoring 12 points a night off the bench.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We'll do a couple more, then we'll jump out of here. The things that happened on the court were strange. Yeah, agreed. It was not a good game. There wasn't a lot of Christmas spirit there in that one. Senpai, I wanted to get to this one. Screw 3 and D, go get athleticism. Well, I think athleticism is kind of baked into 3 and D. Like, you have to have a baseline measure of athleticism to be a decent defender in the NBA. Go get Mathurin and Toppin. Get guys that play hard and run. Look at Keldon, Castle, even Harper dunking. Need that. The Indiana Pacers are kind of a weird team to trade with in that they're not attempting to win much this season. They're going to try to get as high of a draft pick as they can, but they also don't want the cupboard to be bare when Tyrese Halliburton gets home next season. So they don't want to necessarily sell off all of their talent. So that could make negotiating with them a little bit tricky. I don't necessarily mind these guys as targets, but keep in mind Mathurin's an RFA, so you'd have to then pay him on his next contract. And what does that look like defensively? Does he give you what you need? You're certainly getting a lot of bounce and athleticism with those two, but trying to execute that deal could be challenging. And it sounds like what the Pacers want in a Mathurin deal is they want to use him to upgrade their roster. And that's not really what the Lakers are. They're looking to give teams expiring contracts to take on a longer term salary that the team doesn't want.
I'm glad he mentioned Mathurin and Toppin though, because I think, you know, I've seen people mention Nesmith and Nembhard, and I just don't see either one of those guys being realistic, because to your point, I think the way that the Pacers are approaching this, at least to my knowledge and understanding, is they are viewing this as a gap year, but this could be a gap year that propels them into a different stratosphere roster wise next year, in terms of if you add that top 10, top 5 pick, and then you are basically returning the same core. You don't have Miles Turner, but you're returning Halliburton coming off of the year absence with the Achilles, and then you have Nembhard and Nesmith and Siakam and potentially Mathurin and Toppin off the bench, and then also a top 5 to 10 pick. And who knows, maybe they get a top 3 pick and get one of those franchise guys moving forward. Like, now all of a sudden you can go compete. And I think, like, I mean, thinking about if Haliburton had not gotten injured, I mean, there's a whole conversation of if they win the title, but imagining like that Pacers team right now, I think they'd definitely be right up there with Detroit and New York at the top of the East and being competing for winning 55 plus games and like have a real shot to go back to the finals. So that's where I'm glad that I think Mathurin and Toppin are more realistic, because to your point, Mathurin is a restricted free agent, and there's a whole, like, I don't think it's quite Kuminga. Like, Kuminga is a one-off situation, but right. There is an element of, like, I think he views himself longer term as a starting level guy with like potentially even all-star upside just because of his offensive bag, that I don't know if he's going to want to be a long-term bench piece for them. So that's its own thing. And then Toppin, I like as a bench big. I don't think he's a starter, no. But he can certainly be an effective bench big. But to this point, like, this is something that really stood out to me yesterday in watching some of these games, especially OKC San Antonio, and just this leap that San Antonio is making right now, where OKC is able to, I mean, they sped up the Lakers, right? They've been able to speed up most teams. They get you to play out of your comfort zone. They get you to be uncomfortable out there with their athletes and their pressure and their blitzing and rotations. San Antonio has the athletes to go toe to toe with OKC and stand up to them and actually beat them, right? And now they're 3-0 against them in the past 2 weeks. And it's like, part of that is Castle and Harper and Fox, and, you know, having one B is nice, but like they have the athletes and, you know, Vassell and Keldon Johnson. And this is an athletic team that also has a certain amount of two-way play, a certain amount of strength. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the blueprint longer term for how to build a roster, I think, to compete with OKC, because I know people are starting to be out on OKC. I think it's a Spurs specific matchup that's really tough for them, of how the Spurs are able to play them. I don't think that's necessarily true for all the other 28 teams, but that's kind of the blueprint, I think, moving forward, is like you need to be athletic to hang with OKC. And the Lakers are nowhere near that right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, no. And that's why it's going to take a little while for them to get to where they need to be, get the pieces that they want, if they even can get there. But, man, this has been a event session of a show. A lot of negativity. But coming out, I mean, 3-game losing streak, I think it's to be expected. But super chats that we didn't get to, I will save those. We will either put them on the next show. I'll try to do a little in-between show, something like that. We'll make sure that they get addressed. Again, apologies. I know we got a lot of super chats. We will save them and make sure that we get to them. We do have to run, though. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. Make sure you do hit the subscribe button if you've not done so yet. Don't forget to turn on those notifications as well. Jovan, this was an epic show. I think we were all pretty cranky after last night's game and the recent streak here. So I'm glad we were able to all come on here. And I don't know about you, I feel at least a little bit better now, having talked through and vented through all of this.
I feel better as well. And I apologize for the negativity, but to some degree, the reality of the situation right now. One quick note, I will be going live later in the day. Last night did not do a post-game reaction, so going to be doing a post-game reaction on my channel. Just search Jovan Buha or Buha's Block, and I will be venting for a second time today, and I will do my best to bring the same level of force with my monologue.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the show. Don't forget to subscribe again. And give us a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. We need some more reviews over there. Thank you again, everybody. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.